I'm excited to introduce you to my new series of the Leadership Effectiveness Podcast. And in this series, we will be discussing the topic of high-performing teams. We will be joined by several guests from across the leadership effectiveness spectrum who will help us explore the core elements of what makes a team high-performing. We will be discussing the importance of diversity within a team, the role of purpose, the role of goals in order to drive clarity, how to hire the right talent to scale to the next level of organizational growth and team effectiveness, as well as the importance of investing in wellness solutions that will boost your team's psychological health as a strategic performance enhancing priority. In this episode of the Leadership Effectiveness Podcast, we welcome Andrew Lapinowski to our discussion. And Andrew's true passion lies in improving top team performance, as well as leadership mindset, talent empowerment, and a culture realignment. His dedication to these areas is what drives him to achieve business transformation, inspiring those around him with his expertise. Over the past 20 years, Andrew has advised and developed leaders, helping their organizations reach new heights of performance and professionalism. Andrew, thank you very much for finding the time. It is a pleasure to have you join us for the Leadership Effectiveness Podcast. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. We're on the topic of teams. What makes an effective team? What makes a high-performing team? Why do we need teams? So we're going to dive into that and really get under the skin. And I'm looking forward to getting your perspective and sharing, you know, sharing your expert views, your experiences with our listeners. And maybe before I do that, I was reading through your bio. Now, I didn't necessarily need to read the bio because we have worked together, so I know lots about you already. But I loved it when I read this description of often being seen as a disruptive thinker. I've experienced that, having partnered with you in work. But tell me a bit more about that. Disruptive thinker, how does that show up for you in the work that you do?
Oh, well, that's an interesting one. I've received that comment a few times over recent years, and a lot of it has to do with I'm thinking quite a bit these days around the future of organizations, where they're headed from a human-centered perspective, and so I've been speaking, you know, quite a bit at events and having conversations with diverse groups of people around what does this mean tangibly for how organizations are going to fundamentally change in the coming years, and to be fair, already are. So I think that's where it's that's how it's manifesting.
Yeah, nice. And that high level of curiosity, right? To sort of really get under the skin as to what's going on now and how it will help and hinder organizations and teams, therefore, be who they need to be. I think that's the thing. It's that evolvement, because we need to ensure that we are reshaping, rethinking, redoing to meet the demands of what's going on in the marketplace. So that human-centered point that you mentioned, I really like that. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about what you mean there before we get into the meat of talking about teams, because I'm sure there will be a connection as we get into the team conversation.
Oh, sure, I'd be happy to. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff out there, right? In our line of work and in business in general, I find that there's a lot of narratives and a lot of language, a lot of concepts and tools that are not always focused necessarily around really having an impact. Of course, impact are terms that, you know, we talk about all the time, but I think that they're not always working towards that. You know, what is the benefit that this creates for an organization, for society, for the planet, et cetera? And I think the human-centered piece is my way of trying to capture the idea that organizations are going through a transition of structure, of operation, of purpose, of intent, that is fundamentally reshaping them. And most organizations are not ready for this. I think there's an increasing awareness at the executive team that this is necessary. So I find myself when I share this narrative with executive teams or people really at all levels, I don't get a lot of questions. I get just more of a recognition that, yes, that's absolutely the case. How do we do it? Yeah. And so I think for me, things like human-centered, things like mindset, these are common terms that are in some respects overused because they're not necessarily focused on the intent and the impact that they're meant to have. And that's what I find exciting, is that these things, if they are tackled consciously and purposefully, they're actually going to make real change in the way not just our business world operates, but societies.
I think that's incredibly powerful. And I talked recently to a leadership team around a very similar point. Sometimes we can get into our world, we can be on the treadmill, we're, you know, busy, 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 but we're not taking a pause and really thinking about how it is that our work affects beyond, you know, beyond the annual results, beyond the monthly KPIs, whatever it might be. So the so what of what it is that we're doing, and the impact that we can have. I mean, it kind of talks to us being far more purposeful in how we approach our work and why we're doing what we're doing, but possibly a different topic in terms of our purpose. But I really like the way that you're bringing that connection to executive teams, because the way you described it, it makes it real. It's all well and good knowing that we need to transform ourselves as an organization, but it makes it real thinking about the human-centric element to it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it really also for executive teams, so thinking about, you know, these top teams or senior teams that lead our organizations, ironically, the future of, you know, this human-centered future means that the very nature of organizational hierarchy and structure is falling away to a large extent. But ironically, therefore, it has to start with the executive team, because those are the structures we're currently in. And so you need to begin with them if you're going to change everything about them and about the organizations that they run. So I think it is a big question for these teams. And that's where I always find myself starting with these senior teams, is it almost starts to answer the question why they need to be there in the first place. Because most of them, in my experience anyways, aren't sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they've earned their badge. Rightly so, with fantastic experience and well-earned performance. And then all of a sudden, there's this senior leadership team, executive team, sitting there making decisions about a future that they're not fully across exactly what that will be either, right? So they're sort of sitting in a melting pot of unknowns and that unknown factor of, well, who are we in all of this? I think that's an important starting point, at least, for every executive team to get clarity on.
Yeah, and it really actually goes against. So what I found is it fundamentally goes against their nature of what got them to where they are. Mm. Right. So being a team, operating as a team, is counterintuitive to them. These are smart people, right? People don't get to these levels of organizations, especially not in this day and age, without being very capable, very intelligent, you know, very skilled operators, and yet they struggle at these levels. And that's why I wasn't the first by any means. Many people ask this question, but my favorite question whenever, you know, a CEO or a senior leader asks help around aligning and building a more effective team for them, my first question is always, why do you need one? And I'm always struck by the fact that they're still struck by that question. And inevitably, the answers I get from the vast majority of people are still some version of, well, everybody else has one, so don't I need to have one? Which is not a really good basis for having a team.
Yeah. And in addition to that, for us to make sure that we get stuff done. Okay, what is that stuff? So it's a great question. It's such a powerful question. And I think that it can frame a huge amount of then why it is that you end up being there, you know, in terms of the expert to guide them through that piece of work. So maybe for me, we've been talking about, you know, in the past, you and I, around what's going on within teams, what's going on in the marketplace as to why teams are changing the way that they are coming together to work together. What are you seeing going on as to why organizations are being a lot more conscious and focused on needing to do this more team effectiveness work? What do you think is driving this in your experience?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it? And you and I have talked about how there seems to have been a real shift in the market in the last 5 or so years, where historically, you know, most executive teams, I think, had a bit of an attitude of, you know, we're good, you know, fix the people under us, but we're fine kind of mentality. And yet now they're the ones who are recognizing, actually, it starts with us. And I think there's a few factors driving that. Firstly, going way back, if we look back in the kind of 70s and 80s, when team theory and so on was first being researched and developed, especially in the business environment, you know, some of the early thinkers, like John Katzenbach, who is, you know, probably one of the first people who talked about teams in the workplace, he argued that we don't need teams at the top level. He was actually against the idea of a team. He thought that it should be a CEO calling the shots, and there's a group of people that report to that CEO, and that's how work gets done. And I think that the reality is that that was true in its day, because organizations were simpler then. Organizational structures were cleaner. The lines between industries were simpler. The marketplace was less complex. And as we moved into, I guess, what became called in the 90s and early noughties, the VUCA world, I think that's where it became clear that organizations could no longer be led by just the great person theory of leadership. The systems had become far too complex. So I think that was the first point of shift. I think the second point is this idea of VUCA, right, which we're all very familiar with. And I quite like the Institute for the Future a few years ago developed this idea that VUCA is no longer relevant because the world has become even less predictable than what VUCA allowed for. And so we have this new idea of this kind of Bani world. And I think in that kind of environment where things are brittle, where things are incomprehensible, et cetera, you need to be able to use the collective minds of leaders at senior levels to deal with that complexity. So I think the reason ultimately comes from, obviously, the complexity of our businesses evolving, the complexity of our environment evolving, and ultimately in the last few years, triggered to a certain extent, or at least not triggered, forgive me, kind of apexed by COVID, is the fact that leadership and people is the only thing left to change. You know, companies can all kind of fight over the same tech. All they have left as their differentiator is their talent. And they've known this for years, but now they actually have to solve it.
Yes. Talent is the differentiator. Love that tagline. Firmly believe in it, as you know. And then that part that you mentioned around the collective minds. It's got me thinking then around the behavioral shift in some respects that you and I would see teams needing to do. So the collective minds, the collective success. I'm curious, is that something that you would agree with from the perspective of what teams need to do now in order to find themselves in a more effective situation and the way of which they work together?
Yes, absolutely. But I think I would qualify it maybe, because I think when we talk about teams, we're often, a lot of the thinking often goes to how they are working together, as in the dynamics between the people in the teams. And that's important, right? That's critical. But I think it's a little bit more of a meta level thing going on now. So if we look at this, you know, in the psychology world, we talk about the idea of shared reality. Noah Harari kind of articulated in his famous books as shared fictions. I think in a way, this is what executive teams now are responsible for to a large extent, is aligning around a shared reality of what the organization system is and operates within, and then being able to hold themselves mutually accountable for those shared kind of deliverables and objectives. That's where I often find teams get hung up. So there's a number of elements that I think team experts have been talking about for a while around purpose and around trust and so on. But I think we sometimes get hung up in the idea of it's all about the people working together well as the primary issue, when actually that tends to come more naturally once people have a reason to work together.
Mm. Yeah, their hook. I really like that way of flipping it. The reason as to why we're here, let's get clear on that, let's get aligned on that, let's get energized around that. And from there, start to look at what I would still see as important foundations around how we then work together.
And I would really caveat that there's this sense of, if there's anything that I really focus on in my work around teams, it's trust. But it's not trust in the sense of, I trust you not to stab me in the back, right? Mm. Or I trust you as a professional level of trust. It's the level of trust that involves vulnerability. It's the intimacy, if you think of the trust equation from Meister's work. Mm. It's that level of trust that I trust you not to hurt me when I reveal all. And the reason why that's important at the team level, even though that feels quite uncomfortable in the business context, that's usually a level of trust reserved for our close friends and family. But the reason it's necessary in these senior teams is because they need to be able to fight with one another constructively, mm. what's sometimes called constructive conflict. But they have such tough decisions to be made, knotty issues, paradoxes. Most things are never going to be solved. They have to be constantly managing tensions. To be able to have those debates and not hold back and not hide because they're afraid of being called out, that requires a real level of trust. And actually, I can share an example around that. It manifested in an executive team for me, which was just fascinating. So I was working with this one team. This was a number of years ago in the financial services industry. And we'd done, you know, a lot of the foundational building work around trust and their purpose and their shared objectives and how they were going to work together and, you know, the strategy they needed to deliver and all of those kind of things. And then I remember in a follow-up, you know, soon thereafter in a meeting that I observed and attended, they were, I think it was the COO was talking through the operations of a significant part, almost 50% of their enterprise. And at one point, one of the executives kind of put her hand up and said, sorry, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but I have to be honest, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I've listened to this for 2 years. I don't understand what that part of the business does. And for me, I was like, that the vulnerability, the bravery, right? She had never said it before because they didn't have the level of trust. And to me, that changed the conversation. And more importantly, as soon as she said it, three other executives put their hands up as well. So half the executive team didn't know what half the business does. And until this point, they hadn't been able to admit it.
Yeah. You could hear a pin drop. And equally, you found yourself being in breakthrough territory with regards to joining up that piece of who are we as a team and what is the strategy that we're driving here and how do we connect on that? This the bravery that you observed kind of brought a lot of the needs for that to be successful to life. Mm. Prior to that, everyone's just doing a lot of nodding and then going away going,
Well, and we're humans, right? We don't want to look bad in front of our peers. And at that level, there's a lot of politics. And it's like, but I'm sorry, you're running a significant enterprise. And the fact that, you know, half of you don't know what the business does, that is why team interventions are so critical, is because we need you to be having those conversations.
Yeah. And then I'm curious, this might be slightly off tangent, but maybe it comes into that vulnerability and the collective minds. So if you take that example that you observed and you take that leader, put their hand up and said, I don't understand it and I haven't understood it for a while. There's one trail of thought for me that says, that's actually okay. It's okay that you don't understand it. But there must be something that we are connected on that's about it. So it's kind of saying from a technical perspective and sort of truly understanding exactly what it is that this is for, not sure I'm under the skin of that enough. But I understand the direction of travel that we're going towards. I'm aligned maybe on what the future that we're trying to gain is. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm positioning this in the way that I intend, but I suppose what I'm saying is when you look across team, the construct of who is in that team and the expertise that sit within that team and what it is that we know and what it is that we don't know, having transparency on that is okay. It's good. We want it. We don't all need to know everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And I think actually for me, that example highlighted that it wasn't that these other execs needed to know the ins and outs. They didn't need to be technical experts in this space. The problem is that up until this space, this point, the COO and the rest of the exec thought that we were all on the same page, right? Mm. So that's the risk. So I think that actually calling out, I don't know, meant that we could now have a conversation of, well, let's help us all get on the same page. Let's talk about what you don't understand and clarify and create alignment. And that's what they did. And it transformed, actually, it had a big effect on their strategy. But that was the point, that up until this point, they had just been pretending they were all on the same page.
Yeah. And I love that you just said it then had a big effect on their strategy, because it sounds as though up until that point wasn't the right strategy. If you didn't have the collective minds all across it and contributing to it, not just nodding to those that had maybe created it.
That's right. And it speaks to, and this is one of the things, again, that I find that a lot of execs in particular find quite disorienting when it's first kind of brought to their attention. But it's the question of what is your primary role, right? And the research out there says that high functioning executive or senior leadership teams, and when I see, I'm separating the two because some the top of the organization, the exec, others are kind of maybe departmental teams, et cetera, but intact teams that need to not just come together occasionally for projects, but they run significant operations. Those kind of intact teams, I think they're often stuck with this question, going back to what we talked about earlier, of knowing why I'm here. You have to remember that, you know, as you and I have talked about before, and, you know, we find in our own work, these people got to this level by being very fiercely independent, to a certain degree competitive, running their own, managing themselves to high standards, running their teams to high standards, running their departments to high standards, et cetera. And suddenly they're like independent or individual racehorses, stallions that have been competing against one another, and suddenly they are lashed together and told to pull in the same direction. So their entire career has not prepared them for this. They tend to default to going, well, yes, I'm the CFO, I sit on the executive team, so my job is to run the finance department. And actually my challenge to that and the research around high performing teams says, no, your job, your primary responsibility is to be a member of the executive. Your secondary responsibility is to run the finance function. And the reason for that is because, yes, you're in charge of the finance function, but there's a whole function behind you to pick up the slack. Whereas the executive is the only body that is making enterprise level decisions. So if you don't take that seriously, there's nobody else picking up that slack.
Yeah. It's not going to be done, therefore. And we plateau. No. And we often see that, don't we? We often see that happen with organizations, and when that plateau kicks into gear, that's it's no longer got the energy. You can see it's not being disruptive. You can see it might not be making moves, and when it does become disruptive and it does start to make moves, there isn't alignment. And so it just becomes very fragmented. I think that is a critical point that you've just brought into the conversation. And I think one that all leaders listening to this podcast can sit and reflect on, like really sit and reflect on that, because it becomes that transition point of what makes them effective in their executive career versus, and back to that point on phrases from elsewhere, but what's got you here isn't going to get you there. as an individual leader and as a team.
Indeed. And I remember actually one leader in an academic context I was working with a year ago, especially in an academic context, is quite fascinating because, you know, academics historically who find themselves in the management layers of the higher education sector don't tend to think of themselves as managers, right? They think of themselves as the academics that is their passion and their vocation. And I remember that was the penny drop moment for one exec in particular. Was he said, he's like, I now get it. This is my day job. Right. Like, this is the job. The job is to be seated in this meeting with this team. And it was an interesting just, you know, and he really hung on to that for months. I remember him saying that. But it was his realization that actually the job is I'm running a massive higher education institution here. The fact that I might be a professor of X is that was who I was. But actually, this is what I need to be now.
The aha moment. And then for some leaders, you know, you and I have come across this quite a bit. For some leaders, the whole concept and reality, I should say, of what it is that I am now can feel there's a disconnect initially, because what we get our highs from, what we've seen success as, how we've kind of rewarded ourselves, it looks different. And back to maybe that earlier point, it then becomes collective. And we find we have this battle between, well, my independence of being successful has kind of been taken, and I'm not sure how I'm then going to deal with this. I think then we're kind of really delving into the behavioral aspect of how we prepare ourselves as leaders for this team element that is such a priority and critical for any type of business organization to be successful.
And I also think that's why, for me, I've started pulling out more and more this importance of executive mindset. And mindset is, as we said at the beginning, a bit of an overused term. And by it, I'm referring to, you know, the lens through which my values, my beliefs, my opinions, my who I am, my personality, that entire iceberg that is me, that creates a lens through which I interpret the world. Yeah. So both what I take in and what I see out, rather than, you know, a particular set of behaviors or mentality. And I think for executives, especially, you know, this happens at every layer of leadership. If you look at, you know, like Ram Charan's leadership pipeline model and think about how, you know, we transition through stages. But I think there's a huge stage gate similar to the one between being an individual contributor and the first time you play a leadership role. That's a big shift for most people. I think there's a similar magnitude shift that happens when you become an executive, but it isn't acknowledged. It's not recognized. And so I'm finding, to a large extent, half the work around team effectiveness is that in many cases, the executives who make up that team are not operating as executives in their heads yet.
Yeah. The readiness to do it, even just to know what that is. What does that actually look like? Back to then that piece around, what is this team for and how do I show up in this team? For me, I think, you know, you're talking about something that for me is incredibly critical in the approach that I bring when I'm working with executive teams, that there needs to be that interconnection between the leader as an individual and then the team. I seldom just work with the team. I look to have one-to-one coaching time with each member of the team, as well as team coaching time. So just to bridge that gap, and I think the way that you articulated that sort of helps bring my approach to life. So thank you.
And what do you find kind of with teams that you're working with? Are you finding similar themes, or are you finding that there's some other challenges that are emerging in kind of more recent years? Because I think it is an evolution with most organizations now.
I think a lot of what you've talked about in terms of being individually responsible for a particular function, a particular stream of work, and then how you disconnect in some respects that responsibility with the mindset of we are now collectively responsible for NFL Go Enterprise or the breadth of what we are collectively responsible for. That to me has become one of the biggest challenges, but because from a mechanism point of view, how I'm rewarded, what it is I am deemed to be actually accountable and responsible for hasn't shifted to the collective. Mm-hmm. So now we're going into more of the sort of organizational mechanics of how we actually bring this to life in its true sense. So it's the shift from us being aligned in a commitment space to there's actual reward and clear accountabilities for this being the way that we work as a team. Because what I am finding is that I get this, I understand what you're saying, this makes a huge amount of sense to me. And you know what, when we're all together talking about this as a team, I'm with you, right? This makes sense. And then I go sort of back, as it were, sort of physically back into the, an in quotes, day job. And I find myself, that's really where I get my organizational reward.
It's very
and
true.
Accolades.
Yeah, no, it's very true. It's, you're absolutely, you make a really, really important point. I think there's, and that's part of that evolution of organizations, right? Mm. The reward structure is not necessarily reflective. However, I would say that in many ways, I'm increasingly of the mind that yes, you know, the team needs to know why it's there, that purpose needs to be clear, and it needs to be a purpose that's driven, you know, out of the strategy, right? Most top teams, you know, if I ask them, what's your purpose? What are your goals? They just point to the business strategy.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that can't be your goals, right? That's the business, that the whole business needs to do that, not just you lot. And that's kind of where you start building up the team alignment around. So here's what this team and only this team can do to enable those strategic priorities in the strategy to be delivered, right? And what does this team need to do in order to make that happen? But I think increasingly I'm of the mind that there's an element around shared accountability that I'm always seeking to address, but I'm only now becoming more conscious of how weak most environments are for enabling that and how poor most of us are at actually being clear on that. Yeah. And to your point around remuneration, I would say that it's there are two ways that I find that being tackled. One is that once the team has assigned its goals and directions and so on, one of the activities in putting the right systems and processes in place should be a remuneration discussion, right? This is typically in the CEO's gift to change the deal that they have with their execs and say, okay, well, actually, a certain percentage of the bonus will depend on the achievement of these shared objectives rather than just your own objectives. So there is usually room there. But the other thing is most executives' objectives, whether they realize it or not, are dependent on each other, right? So even if I'm just the CFO working in the finance function, a lot of the things I need to do, for example, deliver the annual finance report, depends entirely on all the other department heads actually responding to the information I need.
Exactly.
Right? So they're already codependent on one another. They're just not clear on that. And that's where I find a lot of the wastage happens, is that they're trying to get stuff done, somehow missing the fact that the reason it's not getting done is because they're dependent on somebody else who doesn't know they need to do something.
Yeah. And that for me then comes to them as in them all, having a connection with all, these priorities are all of our priorities. This doesn't sit with you and just sit with you and sit with you individually, and we'll come together and update each other in that sort of information sharing. These are parts that I'll let you know about. We have a collective responsibility to get certain priorities done. Now I might need to spend more of my time on that because of how it sits from an expertise perspective, but I will not be able to complete, I would go as far as saying, anything at an executive level of strategic importance just through my team.
No, absolutely. I'd agree with that.
So a slight segue for you, if I can. Wrapping us up, there was something that you said to me recently, and I thought I want to know a little bit more about this and hear your thoughts. We often hear organizations, and I've heard this quite recently, we are investing in our team. They've had quite a lot of leadership development focus. We've been looking at things like managing change. We've been talking about our stakeholder management. They still have a problem, right? They're still finding that their team aren't, to our, all of our discussion, working as a team. So it's a stumbling block, isn't it? Separating out our leadership effectiveness initiatives and our team coaching and effectiveness initiatives. And I'm just curious to get your thoughts on why you think that stumbling block exists, and if it looks different for you, actually, in the way that I've just described.
Yeah, that's a, I know you and I have talked about that. It's quite a, I'd almost say it's a bit of a controversial issue, actually. I think there's a few reasons for that. So there is a language point around team and leadership that I think has pervaded, you know, the industry for many years. And so there's a few assumptions that are made, which is A, that a team is always better than an individual, which is not true, right? Humans don't necessarily work well together unless they need to. And so putting people together and saying you're a team tends to actually waste time and energy and reduce productivity. So that's why having a purposeful team in a genuinely not, you know, we want to be a purposeful team, but rather there's a reason this team needs to be here that can't be done by a group of individuals, that then can be very effective. But otherwise, you should, you know, the question I answered earlier, why do you need a team? The answer can be, I don't. Right. And often, you know, sometimes it requires bravery to say, actually, we just need to be a working group, a collection of individuals who don't have shared accountabilities and report to the same person. Now, that's, as I say, not common at the top layers anymore because of the complexity of business. But we need to stay conscious of that option being real, not just that's the wrong answer. Right. I think the point around leadership is that we also mix the idea that being a highly effective team and being a good leadership team are similar or the same thing, and they are not. So in the work that I do, I certainly separate that out, which is I don't do any quote leadership work with an executive team until the team effectiveness work is done. And what I mean by that is, they can't start thinking about how they are leading everyone else and providing the direction for the business, the enterprise, until they figure out how they need to work together and on what. Why do they need to work together? Then they can start thinking about that next layer. And if you mix the two, they start thinking about the team effectiveness as being leadership work, and they kind of lose the thread on why the team alignment work is so critical. I think the last reason would be, and this is the very controversial point, but I think in an environment where there's a lot of practitioners in this space, I think that there is quite a range of quality solutions out there, or quite a range of solutions varying in quality out there is what I mean. So while some solutions are focused on helping people like each other better, you know, and get along better at a group level, other solutions are going to be more commercially oriented of what does this team exist to deliver strategically. And different teams will be in different situations in terms of which of those they need. But we have to remember that in most cases, the teams themselves, this is not their area of expertise. They're trusting the person who comes in to help them with this to know which direction to take them. And I think that's sometimes where teams try to do this kind of work and get frustrated that it might not be having the impact that they might want. And I think it's because it's not necessarily focused on what they need at that time.
Yeah. Amen. Well said. And thank you for adding your context to that, because I think from our perspectives, it really helps to ensure that there is some clarity around what it is that we mean by working with a team. And what it means, what it doesn't mean. And I think also what you're saying there is that there is a time and a place for all of it. But first and foremost, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I have similar conversations with my clients, in fact, have walked away or said, not for me, actually, because we're not addressing the first critical part. And getting that tightness within the team and the clarity on the strategy and why we're here and all of those sort of foundational building blocks. And maybe the word foundational isn't right, because it sort of suggests that, I mean, it is foundational, but it's highly critical before having the sort of next part of the conversation from a more of a development standpoint. Good. Is there anything else, Andrew, as you've heard our conversation, that you feel is important for our audience to know that I have not yet asked you?
Oh, I mean, I think there are lots of things. You know, we could take this discussion in so many different directions, as you and I so often do, because I think there's so many permutations of this. I think, you know, building on the point that we've just made, it's understanding the psychology of how people work together. And I think that, as I said a moment ago, teams work best when they have a reason to work together. And investing in getting people to like each other, which is what a lot of team development activities do, starting with that tends to lead people down a route of, well, now we all like each other, but that almost in a way restricts the constructive conflict they need to have to be productive. So I think that would be my last adjacent reflection, which is to reinforcing what you just said, that foundational piece is we need to answer why before we answer how. And I think too often teams start with how rather than why.
Wonderful. Andrew, thank you so much for finding the time for this conversation. I think we've covered a whole host of angles, and I'm very confident that we've put some food for thought out there to our listeners as they reflect on their own team, the decisions that they're making in terms of how they invest their time as a team to become more effective and high performing. And as we said at the start, of service to more than just the organization, the societal impacts of the decisions executive teams make is quite considerable.
Mm. Agreed. No, it's been a pleasure and fascinating conversation as always. So thank you.
Before we conclude this episode, I have some exciting news to share with you. At Newland Rock, we have developed a team effectiveness health check tool that you can now access by visiting newlandrock.com/team health check. We understand that the success of your leadership team is crucial to achieving your organization's strategic goals, and therefore we want to provide our clients with a tool that can help them identify ways to enhance their team's performance. Once you complete the team health check, you will receive immediate insights and recommendations. These insights will help you understand how your team is performing now and identify ways to help you improve their performance for the future, all aligned to our signature program, where we work with high-performing teams across the globe. I hope you find this tool helpful, and I'm looking forward to sharing your results with you.